This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When most of us go to the doctor, we probably don't think twice when we're asked about our family medical history. Mom had this disease, dad's got this disease in his family, or we don't think twice about seeing faces that echo our own. But if you were adopted in Michigan before September of 1980, those doors are slammed shut to you unless the stars align or you hire someone allowed to check the birth records that are off limits to you. Michigan radio listener John Stempian wrote to us describing his experiences as a pre-1980 adoptee in Michigan, wondering how many others are in the same dilemma. Full disclosure here, I too am an adoptee. So John, you are looking at someone who knows exactly what it is you're feeling. I'm wondering what compelled you to write to Michigan radio to basically share your frustrations.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, it's wonderful to connect to another adult adoptee. So it's been a long road, really. I think this fits and starts, and I think it does begin really when my formative years, when I turned 21, and try to look at my background. My parents, you know, loved my parents, my adopted parents. They were very protective of my past. I was a little more inquisitive, and so I wanted to see what this connection was. I mean, it's always for adoptees, I think, folks don't have this experience of living almost like a dual life. There's one part of yourself that's raised with an adopted family, and you cherish that. I mean, that is the nurture aspect. This is a huge heritage gain. And then there's this other unknown factor.
Nature.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that is a really strange component, because I don't, as an adoptee, I did not know how it affected me until piecemeal by piecemeal I started gathering these chunks of my past. And so the first one, I wanted to find out my heritage, and through fits and starts banging my head against certain walls and limitations out there in society, I finally made my way through the maze and ended up at the Catholic Social Service, where I was adopted in Ann Arbor. From there, I was actually given some background information.
Non-identifying.
But it was huge.
Just to get a scrap of something.
It was huge. And I never knew how much that meant after I found out. I was raised in a Polish house, and so a lot of Polish traditions, you know, Christmas Eve and, you know, the pierogies and gwumpkis and all that wonderful ethnic food. But then there's this other part of me that I'm thinking, okay, I know there's a second piece to this. And I found out I was Scottish, Irish, and German. And just knowing that, I walked out of the social service building and just felt grounded for the first time. And it was remarkable. I did not know that kind of experience would come out of that.
Before we get into your full journey, let's talk about the way things are. If you were adopted before 1980 in Michigan, what can you get and what can't you get? What did you find as you started to search?
Well, first off, I found out that everything was closed to me as far as my birth records. Any identifying information about my past was closed. And that was a choice from my biological parent. There's some adoptees out there where this is not a block, where you had a parent during that time between 1945 and 1980 where this is, yes, when we accept and we want to give full consent for this child to find out their past. For myself, no, that was closed. And I petitioned courts, and they said, no, this record is closed.
So what it takes is each party basically fills out a form going, yes, yeah, I'm willing to be contacted.
Yeah.
I'm
now that's to happened. Now that's happened. My journey began really legally in the 1990s. And basically there was nothing.
And you were how old then?
Well, I was in the 20s, my
20s. All right.
And so there was nothing on the books really for rights for me. The only thing that could work for me as an advocate was the Catholic Social Service, who tried to dig around as much as they could. And the only thing they could do was send my biological grandmother a letter, nondescript letter, saying, did you know that adoptees can, you know, contact their parent if the biological parent wants to. So there's little waves made out there. But then it was just a roadblock. And so I just had to make do with that and just move on with my life. And that changed, however, when I had children.
Because?
Again, here's another pivotal moment as an adoptee. Having my son and daughter for the first time in my life, I was able to look at another person and see them reflected in that face.
Your face reflected in
there. It was huge. And that's another moment. And I never realized how much I had been walking through life without experience. And most folks can take that day to day and take it for granted. It was just wonderful. But then, you know, as a father, well, I feel my children are due this heritage. So now it's not so much for me. I thought it would be good, at least for myself, maybe to fill in some of these social holes. But now it's not so much for me. Now it's for a larger heritage from my children and their future, too, and their progeny as well.
Was your focus more on your heritage, or how much of it did you also want to know for their medical history?
That was a big thing for me.
That
was another component, yeah. too. So there's such a matrix that's wrapped up into this. The medical thing gets bounced around so many times. Awkwardly, through most of my life, when I go to the doctor, they ask, you know, what was the family history regards to heart conditions? And I say,
cancer,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Cancer.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. And so then I'm, as an adoptee, from start, have to wind my way through a medical jungle, not knowing, you know, what pitfalls I have to look out for.
Yeah.
By fortune, I found out that I have high cholesterol, and that was just because of a routine blood test. And so now I'm on Lipitor. That's taken care of itself. But if I did not know that, my doctor said I was walking around with a heart attack on my hands. And so that was revealed. But then there's other things. We start thinking about, like, for fathers, what kind of genetic disposition do they give to their daughters as far as breast cancer is concerned? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So that's another unknown that I'm passing out to my children as well.
So where did it go? You got the non-identifying information, and I can relate because I did the very same thing it was in 1990 for me when I got non-identifying information and discovered my own personal history, heritage was not what I'd grown up thinking. They kind of tell you you're whatever your adoptive parents are. It's just kind of easy to say that. But So I did that. Did you take it beyond that?
So the next step was to contact my representative, you know, in the state of Michigan. And so I wrote to him saying, hey, here's the situation. Mm-hmm. These things are closed off to me. And so I got a nice letter back saying, well, they're right now. This was 2012. There was House Bill 5096. And that was going to change the law where then an adoptee could have access to the records if the birth parent has consented and has written a statement and submitted it to what's called the Central Adoption Agency.
So that's pretty much the way it is. You still have to have the consent of the birth parent to be able to crack that.
Right. Who knows if that birth parent is even aware of this or if they dropped off a letter. And so you had some legislation here that tried. It was a bill at the time. It's now law. However, you know, still it's somewhat of, I feel like, a conservative effort trying to crack this open. But for myself, it still doesn't do what I need.
So you still don't know the real information you've been seeking?
Still not. No.
And the argument is, well, gee, we need to preserve the privacy of the birth parent because birth mom or perhaps birth dad have gone on with their lives. And there's a good chance that their families never had any idea of what happened. And it wouldn't be fair to have you or have me come crashing back into their lives all these years later. And to that, you say?
That's always on the periphery. And that's always the central issue. It's interesting how I have friends who are not adopted. And I mentioned that my records are closed, how incensed they get. They get more incensed than I do. And they say, well, that's not right. Once a parent has the child, you know, they don't have any rights. And it's like, whoa, 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 no, time out. That's not how I answered to that. I answered to that this biological parent has their private life. And the idea is that any adoption, you could probably put a good idea down that separation between that child and that parent happened because there were some stressors going on. And that parent, I would believe, probably tried to, if there was asking for no contact, trying to move on and get past that. That I totally respect. We're all entitled to our own lives. But in doing so, trying to enfranchise one person's personal liberties, which was the thought, I believe, of this idea, which is a good thought, however, cripples my own personal liberties.
So who should trump who?
You know, I guess for me, I don't see it as a trump. We have laws already for people not to barge into other person's lives, you know?
People will argue that's what this law is.
Yeah, and I think that's going over the top. I'm just talking about just one-on-one, you know? We have, you know, laws that say, you know, hey, I want a restraining order on this guy. You know, he's barging in. From most of the adoptees I know, they're not seeking to disrupt a life. You know, they're not seeking to disrupt that parent, that biological parent. What they're seeking is part of their own life that they've lost. And they have a right to, just as that birth parent has a right to theirs as well.
But what if you are disrupting a life by making that phone call, getting a name and getting a number, making a phone call that you initiate, that is not a welcome thing in their lives.
No, that's another point. And I struggled with this one for some time. It came to a moment, just by happenstance, I was in the hospital. My stepbrother, who's much older than me, was given the sacrament of the sick, and a priest was in there. And after the sacrament, he turns to me and he says, "Well, you know, who are you?" "Now, that's my stepbrother." Well, you know, my stepbrother at the time was getting into the 70s. I'm in my 40s. And so the priest did a double take. "Well, wait a minute. How is it that..."
You didn't call your adopted brother your brother?
Well, I called him my brother. He called me...
You use the term stepbrother.
Yeah,
I
do that.
Kind of intriguing. How old were you when you were adopted, John?
I was a week old.
Okay.
I was a week old. And so, you know, just trying to get it straight in my head how the family lineage works out. So my mother already had a child previous from a previous marriage, which was my brother, and he had children by the time I was adopted. So I had nephews and nieces when I was born. It's just an interesting matrix. You know, I spoke to the priest, and he's saying, you know, I told him about my background of being adopted. And he asked if I went and searched for my birth mother. And I told him, you know, how far I went with it. And then he started, you know, he reflected for a moment, because, well, let me tell you a story. I knew somebody, a young lady, who wanted to look for her birth parents, and she had an opportunity to do this. And she asked me, should I continue with this? I may be opening a Pandora's box. I may be disrupting another person's life. I don't know what to do. And he said, well, I recommend for you to go forward. And then he got really quiet. He says, well, it did not work out well. Things were horrible. It was the worst experience she ever had in her life. It disrupted the other person's life. And she came back to the priest very disillusioned, very upset, very hurt, and very wounded. However, he turned to me and he said this. He said, despite that, I believe the pain of knowing is a lot easier than the pain of not knowing. And from that, I took some solace. Mm. And I thought, well, if that's true, if the worst is true, whatever happens, that's fine. I think by opening up the truth, there's at least some shot or chance of redemption for any kind of hurt feelings that may have occurred. But that can happen if that piece is not opened.
What kind of conversation are you hoping to spark by writing to us and by coming on stateside and sharing your story, John?
I think, well, I know there's many adoptees out there that may not even be aware that they have some law, some legislation behind them for them to access it. So just to have the conversation is my goal.
Is your goal to be able to have open access to records?
Yeah, absolutely.
Without having to have the consent of a birth parent?
Honestly, it's just straightforward. That's how I feel. Yeah. Again, I feel very fortunate that I was even born. You know, the odds of that happening, especially with the checkered past that I've brought along. As an adoptee, it's a strange wonder walking through this world knowing that, boy, I got a ticket to life. And the odds were that I may not have been here, you know, so should I just lump that and move on? And I don't think so. I mean, I've been blessed to be born and adopted and have two families. But, I mean, the other side to it is that unless I have that right to that life that was given, it's going to be partial.
John, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Oh, thank you, Cindy.
John Stempien is an adult adoptee who has been stopped from learning his full birth heritage by the existing adoption code in Michigan.